This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
There's obviously other big pieces to this case beyond just the touch DNA. We're taking a look now at they have been looking at the triangulation of the cell phone data, and a lot of that does point to him going in and around the house several times prior to the actual murders. They believe he went by the house right after the murders in the morning. And that's just some of the few pieces we know on this very, very sealed up case. They went in, they took all of his digital devices. I'm sure, examined all of them as deeply as they can possibly get. That information still has not been put out there. We don't know what they found, and I'm sure we'll find that out at trial. I'm going to think they probably found some stuff. I have no idea. That's what we still have to find out. But I mean, that would be very interesting. Would you be shocked if there's nothing on any of his devices that point to anything to do with this case?
Yeah, I don't think there will be.
Really?
I think he's pretty thorough because the leakage we're getting. Matter of fact, one of the things they also brought up during the interview with Howard was how disappointed he was that the prosecution didn't have pushback on any of these things Ann Taylor was claiming. They kind of let it ride, and there was still nothing new that came out. So she's poking a lot of holes in the cell phone theory stuff too, just because of how small that town is and how, you know, the cell phone data could be there or it could be 10 miles away. That's what they're saying. So again, and he is and what's interesting about this, he is an all in. It was definitely Koberger guy. You know, and no doubt in his mind, but he is seeing what Ann Taylor is doing to poke all the holes in it as she can, and what it looks like is she is, again, my conjecture, she's capitalizing on what he did to intentionally mislead people, and she's doing a really good job of it. The tiny attorney client privilege on this would be interesting to listen to, wouldn't it? Because I wonder what he is leading her to based on what his knowledge of the scene was. That'd be fascinating.
That would be very fascinating to hear what exactly that'll be one of those things where it'll come out on cassette tapes later, yeah. And we'll all be dead and our kids will hear it.
I just got my fingers crossed, Tony, that it doesn't go south on us because these four beautiful young kids that were murdered bloodless, with a lot of violence, a lot of rage, meaninglessly, all to satisfy some moron that was trying to get off.
His mental health records, Brian Koberger's mental health records, have now been also turned over to the prosecution on this. From a standpoint of, you know, behavioral analysis, what do you think the prosecution is looking for on this? What could they use in their case? And let's also throw it on the other side. And what could the defense use on their case? Obviously, depending on what's in those records.
In my opinion, again, not knowing legally what they can use or not use, I actually think that helps prosecution because from what we've even seen in leakage in social media with the postings he was doing at an earlier age, as a teenager, all the challenges he's had throughout his life, he's got an arc of behavior that says it was escalating to something like this potentially. Because not all crazy broken brains do this, but all people that do this have a crazy broken brain and a life arc to get there. And so he's got a lot of telltale signs from what we've heard, at least in social media, that would lead them to see that. So having prosecution access to those mental health records, I think, is going to help prosecution.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't necessarily make a killer by any means if somebody had trouble in life and have some mental health problems. I think everybody does to a certain extent, but obviously not everyone goes and kills people on that. So I'm wondering how far back those records are going to make much of a difference in this case. Are we going to go all the way back to the teen years where he was writing online allegedly about the visual snow and feeling disconnected emotionally from his loved ones and not knowing what to do or feel about that? I mean, that's a kind of a big one, I would think, in terms of showing lack of empathy or lack of feeling. And also, all the people that he's interacted with, there was complaints. There was a lot of issues from a lot of former students and coworkers of this guy's just there's something missing here. He's off. He's very cold. He doesn't seem to actually connect on a human level. But again, how do you take that into court, and how do you argue that to show that this is also the character of a killer?
So those are a couple different things, I think. I think the testimony of people in his life is going to be different than the health records. Health records, I think, is just going to go back to whenever he was first professionally seen by someone for whatever he's dealing with, and potentially also dealing with a drug addiction as well, whether he got professional help for that as well in recovery. Again, I don't know what's going to be admissible or not admissible, but I think those things are actually the ones leading towards that life arc. Yeah, from what I've, because again, reading the book on him and his family and his dad, I mean, there's a lot of caring in this family about trying to help him throughout his life. And so when you try to help someone, there's a lot of records of people trying to help someone. So he wasn't someone that was cast out by his family at all. And so it's heartbreaking as a parent to look at what, as much effort as his dad put in to save him, didn't work out that well. Obviously, but I think there's going to be a lot of records for it.
I mean, very much, yeah. Like it's a broken brain. If in fact this is him that did do this, with having all those people, feeling that way about him. Obviously, the investigators came in. They caught him packaging up his stuff into baggies and trying to put it into the neighbor's trash. We still don't really know exactly what was in those baggies. What was he trying to package up? Why was he trying to put it into the trash? There's so many unknowns here in this case that we still do not know about. What are some of the pieces that you're most curious about once this reaches trial that you want some answers to, that I'm sure the investigators have, and I'm sure it's out there in discovery this way or that way, but what are some of those pieces to you that you think could really make or break this?
So definitely what was in those trash baggies, obviously. And outside of what we were already seeing, typical behaviors of someone that does something like this, there was a certain amount of stalking that takes place. You know, you have to actually do surveillance. They're going to be obsessing. They're going to be, he's a student. Students don't do things without notes, and so I would be really, really interested to see in what we don't know yet, as you're saying, and that's a digital footprint angle. You know, he might have done a good job of covering his tracks, but at some point I would have thought that he would have taken notes, he would have journaled, he would have done something on this path. And so hopefully that we're going to see that when it comes to trial.
That's what I'm wondering about the most, is that the notes, digital footprint, and things of that nature. I know you said you think we're not going to find anything. I don't know. I wonder about that, again, because of just minds like this. And the one I'm thinking of right now would be the allegations against Rex Huerman. I mean, he literally had notes of, like, and it was the silliest things, too. I can't think of them specifically off the top of my head, but it was like, wash hands, just like basic things. Like, why do you need a note on like, this is the step you need to take, you know, after this? And I'm wondering if we're going to find something like that here.
So it's a great comparison. Rex Huerman also had a lifetime of complacency, because he got really used to his lifestyle, and he acclimated his entire family to that lifestyle, and so it became part of their normal. And you get really, really lazy when you're living in normal. If this was Koberger, this is his most likely his first murder. hopefully, and he had a lot more attention and detail because he was a student of this, and Huerman was just a practitioner of this. And also, though, the reason why I say that we have a probability of not having what we're hoping to find, which he definitely would have done, taking notes, having detailed plans, you know, he would have had to have had that to do what he did, but we still don't have blood, his blood on anything. We can't find clothes, no murder weapon. In other words, he was really, 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 really good at covering his own DNA tracks on from the crime scene itself. He probably would have done the same thing on his digital footprint, I would think.
My conjecture on that, though, is this. you can go into your Facebook account, Instagram, whatever it was that maybe he was using, if in fact he was stalking the girls or looking at them or whatever. And yeah, you can delete your own history. You can delete messages. You can do that. And it deletes it, you know, from your device. It deletes it from what you're able to then access on your cloud. But I mean, they got subpoenas into these companies where they can go back and look further than that. The data, I'm very much guessing, could still be there even if he thought he wiped it correctly. But it's, you know, once it's on the cloud, it's out there when these companies, the info is still there. And if you really, really need it, there's ways of getting it through court orders.
Yes, if you know which ones to look for.
True.
If he purchased burner phones and cloned accounts for everything he was, in other words, he would if he was planning this for a long time in advance, and he bought a burner everything to do all this on, and then disposed of it in fictitious names, it'd be much harder to track down. The only way you could do that, again, I'm not on the tech side of this, would be you'd be looking for cell pings and Wi-Fi connectivity in his apartment that wasn't necessarily linked to his overt accounts. You'd be looking for the covert black accounts. Mm-hmm. Much more challenging for investigators. Again, we're way out there on the conjecture side. But if Howard Bloom is correct in his thoughts and opinions on this, you know, I wouldn't put it by him to do it to that level and extent. I mean, you know, criminals using burner phones, it's pretty common.
Sure.
And could he have used that kind of methodology to do his planning? Yeah, very much so. So we'll see.
Yeah, what was he doing?
I hope not.
Yeah. I mean, you're right. I mean, one would assume if you're stalking someone, you wouldn't be using your name. You wouldn't be on your own account. I would think you'd probably have some sort of fake account going on there. And then it would be very difficult to trace that back, because there's millions of accounts created every single day on these platforms by bots and such, where, you know, they go into the ether. It'd be almost impossible to find, you know, maybe who or what.
And also, Tony, I'm sorry to interrupt, you know, and so let's go back also to think about him as a PhD student in criminology. You know, he studied how people were caught.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so this was a very common way that people got caught. And so it looked like, and that's why my initial thing when I saw him in a courtroom and his initial statements, where he was surprised he was caught, because being a student of people that got caught, he would do all these things to prevent him from being caught by those same methodologies. Him knowing in advance that, hey, people like me keep notes, they journal, and they stalk people. I got to cover my tracks from doing that, so I'll need to do X, Y, and Z. People get caught because they leave blood traces, you know, in their vehicles and all these things, you know, and the murder weapon, all these things. So I need to cover my tracks there.
Do you think he was that smart, or do you think he just got really, really lucky? And now these little pieces are coming up, and Ann Taylor's going, look at this. And he'd be like, yes, that could totally be something too. I mean, it. I don't know. I'm wondering if he is truly as wise as we're giving him credit for.
Wise is a combination of education and experience. That's mm-hmm. wisdom. I don't think he has any wisdom whatsoever. He's a broken brain moron. But he did have academic background, and so I think he was academically trying to cover his tracks. And let's see where it falls apart, because obviously it fell apart with an ice sheaf.
Mm-hmm.
Where it didn't fall apart, again, and this is what Howard was saying, nonstop was about him covering the tracks with both the murder weapon, the coveralls that he purchased on at a store, I think it was on Amazon, and then having no blood traces anywhere on feet, on shoes, outside. I mean, and how did he do that? Where did he do that? I mean, that was the amount of pre-thought and pre-planning was really extreme. I've never heard of it in another case where it was like that clean. It was that sterile that they couldn't. I mean, they said they tore that car. They tore apart the gas tank. They tore apart the brake lines.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for him just pushing on the brake in the car. I mean, they tore that car completely apart to find something and found nothing. That was how. I mean, so.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean that's a good question just in itself of whoever did this. How did anyone get out of that bloody of a crime scene that you'd have to be that intimate with people on, meaning that close to be doing these this stabbing, and to not have anything on you, and to not leave a trace of leaving. Yeah. I mean, anybody, like, there's just not, it's like no one came in some ways, where it happened, but there's no evidence of necessarily someone coming in or leaving anything going out. That to me is also baffling. Take Koberger out of the equation. Whoever did that, like, that's, somebody had some skills there, or again, insanely lucky. I don't know.
Yeah, unless you use even a different vehicle, it's the only thing I thought of as well. And they're looking at analyzing his route that he took. He also Snake River, one of the rivers he drove by, could have dumped stuff in there. But they've been, law enforcement scouring the rivers. They've been scouring the entire area. Howard had a theory of maybe they put it up. Maybe he hit up instead of everyone's looking down on the earth for it. Maybe he put it up in a tree. I mean, there's all kinds of crazy conjecture on what he could have done to hide the, usually the most telling part of any crime is that, and that is what's completely missing from this.
Yeah. So many questions, and we have a long ways to go before this hits the courtroom, and I think anything is still possible.
Very true.
The world of true crime never stops, and neither do we. Press subscribe now to get daily updates, in-depth analysis, and expert opinions from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.